You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Well, time for us to look back at the week in politics. Jim Ellis, EllisInsight.com, The Ellis Insight, is joining us right now. Jim, good to talk with you again.
Oh, thank you, Larry. As you know, it's always my pleasure.
A busy week. The man behind the Department of Justice investigation into President Biden's handling of classified documents, well, he was in the hot seat, grilled about his explosive report in the House hearing back on Tuesday. Former Special Counsel Robert Hur took heat from both sides of the aisle after declining, on one hand, to charge Biden, and then also for characterizing the president as an elderly man with poor memory. Here is Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida. He read a portion of Biden's transcript to the special counsel. Take a listen to this.
And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right?
I love that. Inconsistent with the findings, you know. It's a nice way of saying you didn't tell the truth there. We had that. And, of course, he stuck to his guns on that. Hur wouldn't give the Democrats, a pass on this, did he? So it was kind of interesting that we had that, right?
Right. I mean, both sides were upset with him. So one, for giving Biden special treatment, he basically said the guy has committed a crime, but we're not going to charge him because, well, he's the president and a Democrat. And the others because he dared to even criticize Biden. So, yeah, it was quite a hearing.
And then we had both Biden and Trump getting to the numbers they need to secure the nomination. There was really no real excitement on that because it was pretty much going to be that. Here's a clip from Trump right before, this was back on the weekend before last-minute campaigning. He said,
I want to thank the millions of incredible supporters whose hard work and devotion have led us to this incredible moment in history. You know, this is a movement the likes of which this country has never seen before.
All right, so the rematch is on, right?
Yes, it is. And the fact that they have both reached that magic number is important because they now are in presumptive nominee status. And that means they have enough delegates to win on the first ballot. And they are bound votes. That's the thing that's important because by state law or party rule, these delegates must vote for the way the state voted. So that means both of them have the delegates they need to win on the first ballot. So therefore, the idea, particularly on the Democrat side, that somehow they can swoop in and put somebody else in at the convention just can't happen. The only way these two are not now the nominees is if they themselves decide to withdraw.
Which we don't see happening, barring some unforeseen circumstance. So that's the match there. Another story, the border policy of Biden, you're in trouble when more than a dozen House Democrats are voting to denounce the president's border policy. Here's a report that I have from Mark Meatfield telling us that story. Let's listen to that.
On Tuesday, 14 Democrats voted with Republicans to back a resolution that accuses both Biden and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas of creating the worst border security crisis in the nation's history. The resolution also claims Biden purposely violated United States immigration law and systematically dismantled effective border security measures and interior immigration enforcement. Last month, House Republicans rejected Biden's bipartisan bill that included border security reform. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Yeah, but the kind of reform that it included didn't go very far. Pretty much left it open to the president to decide these numbers and was not a good deal if you really want to tighten up the borders, which, of course, the Democrats, maybe they don't want to tighten up the borders, right?
No, apparently they don't. They obviously need these numbers in there for, and people say, for votes. And I think there is something to that. And also for reapportionment, redistricting, because they count these people in the census. And that's a big fight over the census, whether the census should be limited to citizens or to everybody. And that means the number of congressional districts you have. California would be badly affected if they counted the census only on citizens. They would. Some people estimate that California would lose 5 seats in the House if they did that.
Yeah, with the exodus of people who are saying they've had enough. The influx that is now taking place in California, if nothing else, it could shore up those numbers, maybe.
Yes. I mean, there's no logical reason for this border policy other than something like that, because they're just, what can you see as a positive for this country for what they're doing there?
Well, if you look at the mantra from the far left, they say, and they love to say immigrants, they don't just say illegal immigrants. Immigrants have built this country, and that they're a fabric of our nation, and they take the jobs that many Americans don't want. And declining birth rates mean that we must bring in more people quickly, or schools will have to close, and all sorts of they warn of these things. You know, I get it. There's some issues, but can't you have a system of legal immigration? Can't you vet people? And speaking of vetting, more fallout this past week on the issue of those who are in the country illegally and then they commit a heinous crime. Hear about this? There was a piece of legislation here in California that was moving through, that was kind of getting hearings, that was going to make it possible for those who are in the country illegally and who are alleged to or have committed violent felonies to have the government, the taxpayers, pay for their defense. As far as that might seem. Well, Assemblyman Bill Assaley got wind of this, and then he got on media and really talked it up and got the word out, and apparently they've pulled this thing back. But here's a little bit from Assaley.
That really got our attention, and we made a call to action and encouraged people to call their legislator to stop this bill.
He goes on to describe who this affects.
Talking about people who aren't even supposed to be in the country, number one. Number two, they've committed and been convicted of a crime. And how many more victims do we need before we act? I mean, we just had Lake and Riley in Georgia, a nursing student.
The Assembly Committee pulled the bill on Monday, and it will not be heard. Assaley credits the pushback by the public for stopping the bill. And Jim, Assaley was telling me that this is kind of the power that Republicans are left to use. They don't have the power to outnumber on the votes, but they do have the power to take this directly to the people and kind of raise a stink in the media. Interesting, isn't it?
Yes, that's about the only option they have. And it is just completely out of hand. And I think, you know, the mention, too, of Lake and Riley there, the poor individual who was murdered by this illegal alien that should not have been in the country. Not only was he in illegally, but he committed previous crime.
Right.
And, you know, then you've got Biden apologizing to him for calling him an illegal. I mean, they say, oh, he didn't apologize. Yes, he did. I saw that clip.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a big issue, Larry. We are not going to see the end of that throughout this campaign.
Well, and then floating the term newcomer the week before, I mean, that's not going to play well, because people see the burden on the system, the taxpayers, to pay for their care and their education and their housing. They're seeing the influx of people on the streets who have, you know, nowhere to go. And just to call them newcomers as if, you know, we just welcome everybody in, no rules, going to fly.
Right.
I think that's going to be a major issue as well. Now I want to quickly get
especially with these other countries taking advantage of this. And even Christopher Wray, the FBI director, is sounding the alarm on that.
Yeah.
In terms of the types of people, these terrorists that have gotten into the country because they just walk across the border. And not only over the southern border, the northern border from Canada, too, they've done that.
Yes, very, very much so. That was a story this week as well, that he's warned about the terror threat level, you know, really higher than he seemed. It was already high. Let me ask you about Vince Fong in Bakersfield and his effort to win a congressional seat, but his name on re-election for the seat he serves in the legislature. And you're saying that issue may not be over just yet. Explain.
That issue is not over because Vince Fong, state assemblyman, so when Kevin McCarthy resigned his seat, then Vince Fong wanted to run for Congress, but he had already been certified as a candidate for re-election to the state assembly. And so because McCarthy waited so long to announce he was leaving, it was past the candidate filing deadline. So what happens here is, the Secretary of State ruled, and, you know, I think it's a proper ruling that she made, that under California law, you can't run for two offices at the same time, and he was already certified as an assembly candidate. This is Vince Fong. And so Fong challenged this in court and won, so he was allowed then to run for the congressional seat. He came in first place on the March 5th primary. He advances into the general election. Tuesday now is the special election in that same seat to replace McCarthy for the balance of this term. And so and on the assembly race in the primary, he ended up being unopposed for that. So the Secretary of State then appealed that, and that's why this issue really isn't over, because now it's before higher court, the appellate court, and we'll see what they say about this. Because chances are Fong does not win outright on Tuesday, and then they'll have the general election, I believe it's on May 21st, and whoever wins that takes McCarthy's seat immediately. Now, that at that point, it becomes fairly easy, because then Fong resigns from the assembly, but they would have to call a new special election for his state assembly seat then too. So it gets rather complicated. And if the appellate court rules before the special election concludes and rules he's ineligible, then it's a mess again, because then you probably have to have special election for the congressional seat. So the special election on top of the special election. So it's really, it's a very tangled issue that still really hasn't been resolved.
Yeah. And, you know, it is typical that somebody who serves in the legislature, I don't want to call it, upgrades their position by going for a member of Congress, but there's got to be a way to do that. I mean, and still get there. And a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, the problem with California law, and other states have this problem too, and Texas is a great example, because the only way in Texas you can come off the ballot is if you die.
Ouch.
And California has a similar rule, because once you're certified, you're as a candidate, you're a candidate in that office, and you can't withdraw your name from the ballot then.
Should be able to.
That's the problem.
I don't know. It just seems like you should be able to withdraw if you want to. It's you. It's your future. At least you're giving them advance notice that you don't plan to accept it if you win it. Things change.
The problem is, and the reason they have this law is because it's all about money, because it would force special elections, force redraws, open candidate filings. That's why they do it. It's all about their own money.
Indeed.
The government, you know.
Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com. Thank you for your wise counsel. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Coming up, Assemblyman Bill Assaley, who represents the 63rd Assembly District, to tell us about when your voice can be heard and things that are bad can be stopped. It is an interesting story, and it happened this past week. Assemblyman Assaley, thank you so much for being with us. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me back.
All right, Assemblyman Assaley, set this up. This had to do with AB 2031, which would have potentially endangered Californians by using taxpayer funds to protect criminal illegal immigrants from deportation.
Yeah, so California, most people probably don't know, already has a program where we use tax dollars to pay for the legal descents of illegal aliens in California to help them in their deportation proceedings. That's your tax dollars being used to fight deportation. Now, in that funding, there's always been a prohibition that money will not be used to defend anyone convicted of a violent or serious felony. And what happened last week is Assemblyman Reggie Jones Sawyer introduced a bill to take out that prohibition. So basically, he's greenlighting the funding of legal services to defend criminal illegal immigrants in the deportation proceeding. And that really got our attention, and we made a call to action and encouraged people to call their legislator to stop this bill.
And they pulled it. They actually did pull it. And this bill would have, it was kind of titled around some sort of equity or some sort of racial justice. I mean, they, you know, I don't get, and especially since we're going through the case of a couple people already in this country. I'm in the student in Georgia who was killed by an alleged illegal immigrant, and it amazes me that someone would want to extend those protections to those who are in the country illegally and then do something really horrific.
It is really horrific. We're talking about people who aren't even supposed to be in the country, number one. Number two, they've committed and been convicted of a crime. And how many more victims do we need before we act? I mean, we just had Lake and Riley in Georgia, nursing student. Don't forget Kate Stanley in San Francisco, who was killed by an illegal immigrant, criminal illegal immigrant. How many more victims do we need before we wake up? So, no, it's totally outrageous that they would do this especially with what's going on with the border right now. And yeah, people made their voice heard. We obviously, Republicans are in the minority, so we don't have the votes to stop it ourselves. But what we did is we activated the public. We put out the word on social media, and people responded. They called and emailed the Democrats on the committee, and as a result of the pressure, the author pulled the bill this morning. Now, in all fairness, he could put it back in the future, but we will be on guard and make sure we let the public know if he ever tries to bring this back again.
You know, the sidebar story, and you mentioned the story of the nursing student who was killed allegedly by an illegal. There's been a controversy in the mainstream media about the term illegal immigrant versus undocumented, or I guess the new term they want to use is newcomer. And that's where they focus. They don't focus, the media doesn't focus on the horrific crime that was committed allegedly at the hands of this illegal. And, you know, it's a case where it wouldn't have to happen if we just followed through on the laws that already exist.
It is bizarre that the media is more offended by the word choice of people than they are by the murder of an innocent young woman. They're more offended by words than they are by a murder. Something is wrong in this country where they're bad because they cannot battle in the form of ideas. Their policies are bad. Everyone knows it. So they try to control the language so they can control the debate. And that's what they're fighting about. They want to control our language. And we're not going to let them do that. They're illegal immigrants. I find the other terms offensive to my family who were legal immigrants. And there is a difference between a newcomer, an immigrant, and a legal immigrant than an illegal immigrant, someone who came here the wrong way. They always try to conflate the two because they don't want to have an honest conversation about the issue.
Well, and then there's the name calling. You know, in a viewpoint that you are giving right now, espousing, on the left, they're going to call you, you know, oh, you're a racist. You just don't get it. And, you know, why do you do that? They would say they want to drop it to just name calling rather than solving what is a horrific problem. I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of these individuals are coming across our border in California these days, more so than in places like Texas, because the governor in Texas got wise, got hip to the scene here and put up the barbed wire. Now I know there's been kind of a back and forth with the Supreme Court saying that federal law trumps state law and that the feds can come in and cut it down, but so far they haven't.
No, but the states have a constitutional right to defend themselves, and I know the Supreme Court's going to take over the case, but I do not think the Supreme Court's going to hold that the states have to just basically open the doors. So I'm confident the court will get this right. We have an obligation to defend our country and our states. And you know what? Every elected official took an oath to defend the Constitution, and that needs to be taken seriously. And those people who are enabling illegal immigration, they need to be held accountable, including the NGOs, the nonprofits, and the elected officials who are a part of this scheme.
Well, there is this illegal immigrant economic complex, and a lot of money of tax dollars that we don't have to spend is being pushed into this arena right now. And there are many nonprofit agencies that are just really racking in the dough as they are given much of the work of getting these individuals housed and in places. And of course, they're the cost to local communities. And, you know, the other thing that gets me is the outrage, the feigned outrage by those on the left who are shocked when states like Texas and Florida move these illegal immigrants by bus knowingly to these states, like to California and to other states. They're just shocked that they would do that. But why not? I mean, is Texas supposed to just, you know, carry the burden alone? And even the Biden administration, through the cloaking of night, has been, you know, flying in people over the last 3 years, into various communities around the country. And you get this shock from Democrats in these cities that, you know, why are they doing this? Of course they're doing it. And it's one of the best prescriptions to get everybody in every state aware of this problem. And that's why immigration is the number one problem when you do surveys, isn't it?
It's the number one issue. It's on voters' mind. They understand the threat it poses, not only economic threat, but also a national security threat. When you have people coming in, you don't know who they are, where they're coming from, what their interests are. It is the number one issue. And I believe Donald Trump was elected in 2016 because of the border. And I think he'll get reelected again this year because of the border.
The other issue here in California, and this is a true story, we have this huge deficit, right? I mean, the governor wants to say it's $37 billion, and, you know, the legislative analysts say, no, it's more like 67 or higher or 80. But you have this funding of health care to those who are in the country illegally, over that of which people who are in the country illegally. I mean, they've created a carve-out as a special protection. You ask, well, why are you doing it? Well, health care is a humanitarian right, they say. Health care is, and once again, Bill Asaley and Larry, you guys are racist because you don't want to provide health care.
No, we want to provide health care to our citizens. We can't even do that now. You go into these inner cities, you go to people in the lower socioeconomic classes in America, they do have a problem getting access to health care. So rather than focusing our resources on them, the legislature here wants to allocate $4 billion to expand Medi-Cal to illegal immigrants. And mind you, there's no cap on how many illegal immigrants can sign up. So they would rather prioritize citizens of foreign countries before citizens of their own countries. This is outrageous that they would do this. And so that's why I introduced a bill to reverse that. And we don't have money for it either. We don't have an extra $4 billion lying around. And by the way, I asked the governor's office, is there a cap? I mean, if we have 1 million people cross the border and they come to California, are you going to sign all of them up for health care? And they said, yes, there's no cap. So now we've created a massive incentive for people to come illegally, not only to the United States, but specifically the state of California.
And the reason is what? They want to make up for the exodus of the upper middle class, the 200,000 and greater employees that are leaving our state. Are they trying to shore up the numbers by creating a new citizenry in California, or what are they doing? What's the reason?
I think it's probably a mix of both. Number one, it's a form of virtue signaling, because that's all the Democrat Party is interested in. They don't actually care about governing or any policy. It's just virtue signaling. And, and I do think part of it too is a population issue, because people are leaving the state of California. And, you know, Elon Musk has been pointing this out now for the past few weeks, that in the census, illegal immigrants get counted in the census. So we're appropriate when we're deciding how many representatives every state gets. They get to count the illegal immigrants in there.
Yeah.
They get more members of Congress and more representation and ultimately more money.
Well, California, I read somewhere, was slated to lose potentially 5 members of Congress if the numbers don't reverse themselves as far as the exodus. So maybe that's the plan. I mean, who knows? We have to pay for this. We have to provide services for it. We have to provide schooling and education and health care all the way through. And I get it that the unions probably love it, the teachers' unions, because, you know, we're seeing some schools that have to be, shut down because of lack of students, and they want to have people. And I guess I don't know what the chambers of commerce want for a labor force, but, you know, they're probably downward pressures from some in the business community quietly who'd like to have an influx. But then you get lawmakers that pass $20 an hour fast food minimums. You know, what's that? How can we, you know, pay that kind of money out to people and still provide food to people for, you know, under $25 for a burger and fries? We can't.
There's going to be a reckoning this year, because the LAO, the Independent Legislative Analyst Office, says that we're going to have a $70 billion shortfall in this year's budget. The governor is saying it's only going to be $30 million. So that's about $30 billion. So there's a $40 billion difference between what the LAO is saying, what the governor is saying. In May, we will get the final numbers, and by June, they have to pass a budget. So we're going to have a reckoning here in the next few months. And you have a bunch of Democrats in this legislature that have never cut anything in their life. So we're going to see what happens with California. They're going to have to make some serious cuts here in the next couple months.
Well, I know the governor has said he's opposed to a wealth tax, but there's some talk of that brewing out there. People, you know, on the budgets, the Dems and the left always say, why can't the wealthy pay their fair share? And we've done shows after shows about what that really means. The wealthy do pay quite a bit of money. In fact, the top few percent pay the bulk of the way when it comes to revenue. And yet the left never acknowledges that. Just come take more. Hey, we're out of time. Bill Asaley, thank you for talking with us. Successful in blocking AB 2031 at this time. They're going to keep an eye on it. Thank you so much for being with us on the program today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590.
the answer. You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
We recently had a conversation with Congressman Ken Calvert about last week's State of the Union address, and we go into detail in some of the issues. I want to share it with you now.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Quick thoughts. Your thoughts on the State of the Union address. What were your initial reactions?
I've watched a lot of State of the Union addresses over the years. I've never seen one that was more divisive, more of a campaign-style speech that gave nothing to the whole country. It was very much a leftist Democratic perspective of what he would like to see happen in America. He did not reach out at all to the Republican side of the aisle, and disappointing.
Some say it may have been by design that if he
I think you're right, Larry. I think what he's doing is I think he wanted to prove to his base that he is still someone that they would nominate in Chicago for president of the United States, and I think he was talking to them. He wasn't talking to us.
Well, going into this, 38% support, a lot of people questioning whether he had the mental faculties to do this. He seemed overly alert, maybe, right?
Well, he certainly seemed grouchy. I mean, he's loud and, you know, and certainly didn't reach out to all of the country, which the president, I think, should do. And it doesn't change the problems that this country is experiencing. Everywhere Americans look, our country is declined. Wages are not keeping up with price increases, no matter what he says. Americans are falling further behind. The crime is up. The border is wide open. And our adversaries around the world are more emboldened because of America's weakness. So I don't think he, you know, as much as he tried to convince people, he didn't convince them of anything.
Yeah. Well, let's talk policy. He blamed Republicans for not agreeing to a so-called bipartisan plan on the border. But people who've peeled back that agreement say that it was woefully deficient in many different areas and still allowed a lot of illegals to come in. Let's talk policy. There is a piece of legislation that is ready to go to be approved, but never has been.
Well, H.R. 2 would take care of the problem. The biggest problem that he removed the first day he was in president was Remain in Mexico. He could do that tomorrow. He could sign an executive order, Remain in Mexico, and take care of 75% of the problem. Those people who want to process for immigration would have to remain in Mexico until their cases are adjudicated. And he won't do that. So he wants to blame us for everything. Well, he could do that tomorrow. He could also start securing the border once again. He stopped doing that the day he was elected president. And so, you know, he wants to blame us for things that he's not doing. He just wants to have better processing to process people to come into the United States. He doesn't want to do anything to secure the border. So, you know, and the problem we have now, we not only have 9 million people that cross the southern border, but we have 600,000 known getaways. And many of those are terrorists that have come from the Middle East and elsewhere. They're now in the United States and have a desire to attack Americans.
Yeah, and there's also the issue of violence and crime committed by those who are here in the country. I would think, it's just me, if I came to the country illegally, I would, you know, mind my P's and Q's and try to blend in and not be violent and get into fights or kill people. You have this case of this college student who was killed allegedly at the hands of an illegal, and in the speech, he did acknowledge her, got her name slightly wrong, and I want to listen to that, and then we'll talk about it. But then, as you listen, he doesn't acknowledge his policies as being any part of this, but goes and turns around and says, legals commit crime, too, and nobody talks about that. Take a listen to this soundbite, okay?
I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels political win. He viewed it as it'll be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Wow. To turn around and equate it as, you know, this argue that, oh, well, he's just part of the numbers of the fabric of America, I guess. Your reaction to that?
Well, there's no moral equivalency there. That's ridiculous. This person who murdered Lincoln Riley was a criminal from Venezuela. You know, what's going on is they're clearing out their prisons in all these countries and sending them on over. And so they don't doing the background checks. They're getting into the United States. And even when they commit a crime, they don't let ICE aware of it where they can go pick them up and send them back. That's what we were doing during the Trump administration. No, they just let them stay here. And these sanctuary cities just perpetuate this illegality that now has led to this young lady's murder and other people who've been raped and murdered all around the country. So this has to come to an end. This type of activity has to end, and it's only going to end when we get a new president.
I want to talk with you about a few other things in the speech that he gave. Biden talked about establishing a temporary pier in the Mediterranean for Gaza assistance. Here's what he said.
I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground. A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day.
All right, I've heard two things on this. One side says, hey, it's humanitarian assistance, why not? And another side says, wait a second, everything that comes through there is going to go directly to the leaders of Hamas and not get to the people.
Well, one, they haven't contacted us to find out how they're going to pay for this and what authorities he's operating under other than yet another executive order. But humanitarian aid has been allowed into Gaza from Egypt, and just recently U.S. forces have directed air aid into Gaza. The problem with this proposal is that, and I haven't seen it in writing yet, is how are we going to defend the individuals that are putting in this temporary facility? And continue to defend it, and how they're going to get these ships in without having them attacked, and having the people that may have to secure that perimeter attacked. And so it's an incomplete action on his part, and I would like to see it. I think the American people would like to see it. But I stand with Israel, and we need to. You know, needs to stand with them to allow them to do what is necessary to destroy Hamas. I mean, obviously, we're all sympathetic to what's going on with the Palestinian community. But this horror that happened to them on October 7th has to be dealt with. And Hamas chose to attack Israel. Hamas chose to locate its terror network among civilian population. So these populations are obviously affected. And Hamas continues to build rockets to this day instead of improving, you know, the security around their people that they're supposed to protect. So, look, it's a difficult situation. But Hamas has said very clearly that their aim is the destruction of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And I don't think there can be any peace until Hamas is eradicated. And that's why the United States stands with Israel in its campaign to rip Hamas out by its roots. No. And that's what we need to do.
Does the policy, though, get strained when it's an election year and Biden needs Michigan, and Michigan has some supporters up there who are withholding their vote unless he plays it on both sides? I mean, I hate to say policy is subject to politics, but is it?
Yeah. Well, so one of my friends pointed out last night when Biden was referring to a two-state solution, what he was really referring to was Minnesota and Michigan.
Ouch. Ouch.
So this so-called solution that he's coming at is purely political on his part, and that was a purely political speech last night.
Yeah. Let's talk about we briefly mentioned the economy, and you're right. People they go to the grocery store. They know what $50 or $100 bought a few years ago. They know what it doesn't buy today. And then when they hear numbers that are announced in the speech, take a listen to this.
The racial wealth gap is as small as it's been in 20 years. Wages keep going up, inflation keeps coming down.
All right, let's take that for a second. Wages keep going up, inflation comes down. What he's not saying is the actual buying power of your wage is down. So when you get paid every week, that money doesn't go in as far. It's like a cut, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me of that old country western song, your lying eyes. You know, don't believe what's going on. Just believe what I tell you. You know, and so when people go to the market, they see exactly what's going on. You know, they know what the price of eggs is, and they know the, you know, in an old restaurant guy, I follow that pretty closely. And I, you know, you look at grocery prices today versus what they were 2 years ago, people know that they're paying a heck of a lot more, and that they know that, their wages aren't keeping up with that.
Yeah. But he doesn't say it. And, you expect him to sit there and admit everything. I guess you don't do that when you're giving your State of the Union address. But if he would just learn from his mistakes, he might have a chance of getting reelected. But he doesn't seem to learn.
Well, I think he's forgetful. So I'm trying to be charitable here. But not the same Joe Biden he was 3 years ago. And he's certainly not the same Joe Biden he was 10 years ago. And that's a big part of the problem.
Somebody's running that White House, and some say that he brought into his team a lot of the Bernie Sanders folks, and they're actually running stuff. And it's very far to the left. Your thought?
Well, the speech was very far to the left, so somebody wrote that speech, and he read that speech. And so obviously that's where the direction of the White House is going, not the direction that the American people want it to go, but to the far left progressive wing of the Democratic Party. That's who's running the show. And I think that's who he was talking to last night. And that's he wants them to keep him as their presidential candidate when they go to Chicago this summer.
We are out of time. Wish we could talk longer. Thank you for being with us. Congressman.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate Thanks, your time with us. Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye. Well, have a great weekend.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Representative Mike Garcia from the 27th Congressional District is joining us. He is joining us right now. Congratulations for the first part of the election. How are you?
Good. We're doing great. Very proud of the campaign results. Tuesday's the primary, obviously. It's an open jungle primary, so it's, you know, both parties competing against each other. I ran against two Democrats, and we were walking away with about 56% of the vote. In a district where there's only 29% Republicans. So I think it's a testimony, one, that our constituents are very grateful for the constituent services that our offices provide, that I stand for security, that I, look after the Constitution and the nation before I look after any sort of party allegiances. And proud of my voters. They're very, very well informed, and they're voting their principles rather than a blind loyalty to your party. So we had a great night.
Yeah, sounds like they like you up there, 27th Congressional District. Let's talk some of the issues in the news this past week. Obviously, the election, and then we had the week before the State of the Union, and then we had her testimony, the Biden documents thing here, where on Tuesday, Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida reads a portion of President Biden's transcript back to Special Counsel Hur, and this is how it sounded.
And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right?
And the takeaways were the Democrats wanted her to say he exonerated Biden. He would not do that, clearly saying he was not exonerated. Have this whole issue of, you know, is Biden competent or not? I mean, he gave a fiery speech on the State of the Union, a lot of B1 shots or something. We don't know. But what's your takeaway on all this stuff?
Well, first of all, just because you have something that can be locked or is locked doesn't mean that it's actually a secure space. There are what are called SCIFs, secure compartmentalization or compartmentalized information facilities. These are what are actually legally defined as areas where you can hold classified information. So just because you have a safe in your basement, like a gun safe, doesn't mean that that's appropriate for the securing of classified data. So just because you can lock it up, or it was locked up, or it wasn't locked up, but it could have been. That's interesting, but that's not following protocol for classified data. So the HER investigation also said that one of the reasons they didn't charge then Vice President Biden, or now President Biden, is because they didn't think that he would be able to handle the trials and tribulations of going through such a trial. And I would submit that being President of the United States on a daily basis is a larger trial. There's more tribulations. It's a tougher environment to be President of the United States than simply standing trial for the mishandling of classified documents. So if you can't do that, then he certainly can't hold the office and at least do it with integrity and you know, full cognitive ability.
Sure.
So now I want him on the ticket. I think he needs to stay on the ticket. He's obviously going to be the nominee for the Democrat Party, but his State of the Union was effectively a Democrat rally. I've never been invited to a presidential Democrat, a national committee rally, but that's what that was. And it was about as divisive rhetoric as we've seen from a president sitting at the podium on a speaker of the, you know, State of the Union.
Well, and he had the same themes that Democrats typically do. They use that phrase, the rich need to pay their fair share. He came out with his budget after that, calling for raising taxes on the wealthy. I had Steve Moore, economist Steve Moore, on that night, and Steve said, what's he talking about? The wealthy pay the majority of taxes already. You know, I mean, well, you're just trying to bleed them for more, I guess. And Democrats like to spend more money, don't they?
Yeah, the wealthy don't just pay the majority of the taxes. They also create the majority of the jobs. So when you start going after the wealthy, when you start over-regulating over taxes, you're incentivizing them to leave business spaces. You're incentivizing them to cut jobs. California is a perfect example where every time there's a threat to raise the minimum wage, you see more kiosks go into the McDonald's and fewer workers. And now all of a sudden fast food is, you know, $15 for a Big Mac combo, and it takes 15 to 20 minutes to get that because we're relying on machines instead of humans. But that's what corporations do in response to higher taxes and regulations. So my job is to prevent the union, the federal government, the country from turning into what California has become. And what the president basically did was make all these fake promises of free stuff to try to win votes. But that free stuff isn't actually free. It comes in the form of $33 trillion in debt, higher taxes for most of us. And for those of us who are the recipients of the free stuff, you end up finding yourself out of a job or being unable to afford the goods because of record high inflation.
Well, you talk about the free stuff. He proposed a $400 in monthly for 2 years subsidy to new home buyers or those buying up in properties. And again, Steve Moore was our guest economist. He says, you know, what's the deal here? The reason he's doing that is inflation, which he caused, is, you know, doubling people's mortgages. And $400 is not going to do much, right?
Yeah, it's not going to do much, but it also aggravates inflation. So now the price of new homes goes up by $400. It's not like that's going to be a true rebate, right? So the affordability index is an all-time low right now because of the fact that we've had record high inflation for 3 years as a result of out-of-control spending under Schumer, Pelosi, and Biden. You know, we spend $1.5 trillion, $1.8 trillion a year, $1.9 trillion this year, and we've spent $6 trillion on COVID for the last 3 years, and this is why we have this inflation. So we need to deregulate, make the cost of living more affordable by lowering regulation, put a little more supply into the market, and we'll see things stabilize and prices come down.
You mentioned a couple things, that Biden's going to be the nominee and Biden is the one we kind of want to run against. Let's explore that. I've heard that being batted around. You know, there's some pundits who just like to play Biden's mistakes, but some say it's better to run against Biden. Let him be the one that they've got on their ticket because, you know, right now Trump can beat him, right?
Yeah, I think first of all, he is on trajectory to be the nominee. So if you're truly an advocate for democracy and you see the electoral count the way it is right now, the Democrats would be hard pressed to now remove him from the ticket. That goes against the grain of Democratic voices in several states now, especially after Super Tuesday. So the second thing, look, is he's adamant he's capable of doing the job. So let him run. Let's keep him on the ticket. I think he is the most vulnerable candidate. I think Americans are eyes wide open to his failures, from Afghanistan to the open border to the to the flip-flopping on Israel and the economy that he's trying to take credit for, which is actually backbreaking for most Americans. So he'll be a one-termer.
All right, taking it to a bit of a topic, the one involving the college student who was killed by an illegal immigrant, and I use the word illegal immigrant. I know there's been a debate about whether he should be an undocumented or a newcomer or other titles there. The mainstream media seems to be off of that tangent when the issue is this guy allegedly, who shouldn't have been in this country, kills an American. That's wrong. He shouldn't have been there. It wouldn't have happened, right?
Right. And I don't care what side of the academic debate you fall on, whether they're illegal or undocumented. When you kill someone, you are illegal and you're here as an immigrant. There should be no, you know, ambiguity about him being an illegal immigrant. He crossed here illegally. He's here illegally. He is also undocumented, and then he killed Lincoln Riley, which is, you know, an act of murder of the worst sort. So, the fact that people get soft and fear-based behavior changes their tone and demeanor and the way they describe things that are so obvious to most of us just shows you how weak this president is, and frankly, the 10%. Are also that. By the way, liberals, moderate Democrats, they realize all this too. These aren't necessarily the bad guys, especially voters. They see the vulnerability we have right now as a nation.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to a little clip that involves this issue and see if we can draw out one other part of this. This is a Biden from the State of the Union on the death of the individual. Take a listen. Right,
I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels political win. He viewed it as would be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Yeah, there's Biden suggesting that there's some sort of equivalency here, or, well, there aren't that many who die on the hands of illegals versus legals. And that's a shocking question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost an excuse for it, as if it's an alibi. Look, the fact is if anyone kills another human being, they should be held accountable, regardless of their status, immigration status. And if you, like I said, if you had an academic debate about whether this person is an illegal immigrant or not, the fact that he committed murder should answer that question for you at that point. This is an illegal activity of the worst sort. Now, everyone who commits murder should be held accountable. We also can't forget that 75,000 people last year died of fentanyl poisoning, and the primary source of not just the trafficking of that across our southern border, but the precursors of fentanyl coming across the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, from China, being fabricated into pills in Mexico and then brought, smuggled into our southern border and killing our kids in massive numbers, is something that has also been forgotten. So, you know, this is the challenge that the president has, is that there are people dying unnecessarily because of these policies. And we already have enough people dying. We don't need it to be aggravated by the policies of the White House.
So what is their game plan here? They know the death. They've done the polling. Is it to remake the voters in the future? Is it a push by the chamber to get more cheap labor in here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. The theory is that it's to get more voters in the future. But I got to tell you, I'm in a district with 33% Hispanics. You know, I'm the son of an immigrant, and I think that even these illegal folks, once they start getting their taxes and their W-2s, are going to start voting for fiscal conservatives and recognizing that none of this stuff comes for free. So, look, the problem is we have 7 million people now in our country who we don't know who they are. They're undocumented, illegally across the border, and it's a national security risk. We have seen something like over 160 people across the border who have been apprehended in the last year who are on the known terror watch list. And this is compared to, you know, two or three just 5 years ago that we would have normally seen. So in my opinion, we're in a more vulnerable position than we were before 9/11 in 2001, not just because of Russia and China and all of the blizzard of crises we're in, but because of the fact that we have a completely open border with no accountability of the people who come across. So this is a real issue. Yeah. By the way, there's most of the Democrats in my district are saying the same thing. This isn't a political issue. So for the president to try to politicize this and put his head in the sand is actually, from a political perspective, not a wise move.
I would think not. Out of time.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate you. Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer.